When we say chief pursuer, does that mean you believe they have a chance, or just, you know, if they think it's a smart organizational move to go after one of the best players on the planet?
I mean, first of all, I think any team that sees itself with cap space in 2021, like, who should we go after? Like, yeah. Obviously, yeah. This is the first guy on the list. I do think there's a little more connecting tissue in here with Giannis and the Raptors. I mean, Toronto's always seen itself as this more of a destination point for international players than American players, and this definitely would fall in line with that. And there's still, you know, I think until he wins a title in Milwaukee, this question will always be out there of what he's going to do when his contract expires, or until he signs an extension with them. And it's just inevitable. I mean, we dealt with the same thing in Memphis with Mark's free agent year, even though we knew he was coming back. You know what I mean? So I can only imagine what it's like when there's more doubt. And you guys know from, like, the Bosch situation, this stuff is just always going to be out there until it goes away by him resigning. But I think if he does decide to leave Milwaukee, I think Toronto will be one of the chief, you know, destination points for him. And I think the Raptors are aware of that too.
Yeah, I mean, now we know it more as the Kawhi situation after spending an entire year, like, he's going to stay. And after the shot, like, how could he leave now? And then after a title, like, there's no way. And then it happening. And yeah, it doesn't help things that Giannis gave those comments to the Harvard Business Journal, of which he says didn't happen, but again, are really difficult to believe that they didn't. The conversation is, though, is the one that you have in the piece, which is, you know, how you best position yourself to make that pitch to Giannis Antetokounmpo. And for a while now, we've been in this position where the Raptors' best shot is remaining competitive, being a stable organization, and having those pieces ready, just like they did last time, that if you need to make a move, you can make them. But I guess the first thing is, where does that begin this season?
Yeah, because I mean, you're looking at a situation where Kyle Lowry, Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka are all on the wrong side of 30. Fred VanVleet will be an unrestricted free agent, even though he's a younger player. So there's a lot of questions that the Raptors need to answer as to what their team looks like when they go into that summer. Obviously, they locked up Pascal Siakam, which is hugely important. He gets exponentially better with seemingly every game, just become an unbelievable player. And he'd be the key, I think, to any pitch to any free agent, whether it's Giannis or somebody else, that, okay, here's a player in his prime who's really good that you can play with, because these guys all want to team up these days with other stars. And then from that point, though, you're looking at, you know, Lowry, Gasol, Ibaka will be in their mid-30s by that point. So you're probably looking at a situation where they're going to have to see what's out there for those guys especially, and what they can do to kind of make themselves look as competitive as possible for that 2021 to 2024, let's say, window, where you might have a chance to sign a major free agent and have minor team in his prime with Siakam in his prime for a few years. I think that's probably the end game you're shooting for in Toronto.
Isn't it kind of, you're in a bit of a tough spot because this team looks pretty good this year. Like, I don't know if they're going to win a championship good, but, like, pretty good.
Yeah.
And Pascal's taking a step. But, yeah, you're probably not, like, one of the two or three or four teams that really have a shot of winning it all. And next year might be the more important year as far as impressing Giannis. And you have those tradable assets, maybe. I mean, they're on big tickets, but on expiring deals, that you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place where, like, yeah, man, you have a shot to do something kind of interesting this year, but it's more interesting to be better next year than this year.
Yeah, and even the being better next year is contingent on being able to paint a picture of what you'll be a year later than that. So it's a complicated dance. I mean, I think especially being in the Eastern Conference, they have this opportunity to have their cake and eat it too, because they can probably bank enough wins to get to the playoffs, maybe even get a top four seed, and still maybe cash out on some of these assets and set themselves up for the future a little better.
You just made me realize something that's kind of a hot take, which is maybe Pascal Siakam is the best and worst thing, his development for the Giannis pitch, which is, it's the best thing in terms of saying to Giannis, hey, you can come here and play with Siakam. But if you're looking at trying to establish yourself with some picks and more flexibility, Siakam being what we're seeing so far is impetus to keep Lowry, to keep Gasol, to not shop anybody, to not make any moves that are future moves or flexibility moves. Because how can you move anybody when he's playing like this?
Well, I mean, I think that's going to be the interesting part of it. You know, what can you get back? You know, can you trade for years? You know, can you trade 32 for 22 basically, and maybe get somebody who's still a pretty good player, but is a much younger player and can be, you know, more along the lines on the same time curve as Siakam and whatever you have in 21. You know, you're not necessarily just cashing out for picks, I think is the way you have to look at it.
Is there a scenario where you see the Raptors bringing back one of Ibaka or Gasol on like a 1-year deal? Of course, you're not messing with the cap space in 2 years.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I could definitely see that. And in fact, that either of them could sign an extension, all the way up to June 30th. So, I think that's going to be on the table until it isn't, basically, you know, until their contracts expire or they're moved. So, I think that's definitely an option for Toronto. You saw they already did it with Kyle. I think they'd have to be looking at that with the two bigs as well.
Yeah, I think they're probably contemplating it as we speak. So we talked about the early returns on Pascal Siakam, already a most improved player from a year ago, and it's so early, and the competition hasn't been great, save for the game against the Celtics. But what happens if, like, hey, I almost did write them off as championship contenders, but if Pascal Siakam, like, takes another most improved player progression this season, are they not in the mix already? And how does that change things if Pascal Siakam is like a top 10, top 5 player in the NBA?
Well, I still think they're probably on the fringe, even with all that. I think the Raptors have some depth questions and some questions on the wing still, but they definitely can get, I mean, they're going to win more games than I projected because Siakam has taken another leap that I just can't even believe how much better he is coming off a most improved player season. Like, it's ridiculous that he could win this award twice in a row, and he might. That, like, that's insane. And so this team's going to be better than I thought coming into the year, but I still have a hard time seeing them hang with, say, the Milwaukee's and Philadelphia's and maybe even the Boston's over the course of the whole season. And I think their depth as you get further in the season is going to be a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, the one thing I think you feel confident in as a Raptors fan, though, or as someone who follows the team for a while, is they've done such a good job at finding those depth players that you just kind of figure with the patience and being able to have those guys behind the Raptors and having those guys in their set roles that, you know, someone like a Terrence Davis or someone like a Rondae Hollis-Jefferson that is a little further down the bench right now emerges later in the year and is actually able to give you a contribution. But, and it's why, like, okay, the Siakam thing is wild, and it's early, and we can give it all the caveats we want, but he just looks so comfortable as a number one option to start this year that it's really hard to think of him taking some, you know, massive step down from this, or that this being so extremely fraudulent. And, you know, you wrote in the piece that most insiders would be surprised to see Toronto with the same roster in March. Do you think it's at all on the table that they could add to that group?
You know, if they're near the top in the East, I mean, if I'm wrong and if they're on pace to like win in the mid 50s and legitimately contend, yeah, then I could see Masai going the other way and being like, okay, let me push some more chips in right now. We'll have to see how this season plays out. I mean, that's part of the dance, right? And in any front offices, you see what you have first. That's why virtually no trades happened in November. So he's going to see what they have and let this play out as long as possible. But if they end up where most people think they're going to end up, I do think he's going to go the other direction when they get to February.
Talking to John Hollinger. So yeah, the other aspect of this, even in the comments to the Harvard Business Journal from Giannis, is that like the Bucks have to not be contenders, which they still appear to be. Like, if you're factoring that in, and this year, I mean, it's hard to imagine them not being, but like next year, what do you think the likelihood is that the Raptors have already are showing Giannis that they're the more likely path to contention than being in Milwaukee with that Bucks team if you're taking location out of it?
Well, I mean, you just have to show it on the court, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens in Milwaukee. You know, I think for some of these players, you know, the goalposts move too. I mean, Milwaukee had never been good before, and then last year they were awesome in the regular season and really awesome up until the point they weren't, up until game three of the conference finals. And so you just got to see if he gets frustrated, if they can't get over the hump, or if he, you know, just decides he's, you know, that's where he wants to stay. And you don't know what he's going to be feeling in 2 years. You just have to try to make the best case you can over that time period. And then obviously Toronto can put themselves in a position where there's some other, you know, pretty great free agents, it seems like, coming on in that 2021 market. And next year's market has basically nobody, so they're not missing out on anything by waiting until 21.
Yeah, the thing I wonder too is you've been now a front office for the last five seasons, and how hard is it for teams to, you know, what's the dialogue like when these things evolve and you kind of have to be different all of a sudden than your early season projection? Because yeah, the Raptors at the beginning of the year, I think everyone kind of accepted that everything's on the table. Lowry, you know, you get a good deal, you make that trade. Ibaka, you make that trade. Gasol, you make that trade. But again, it is a team that if they do exceed expectations, like the plan can change. You're trying to decide who you're in on, who you're out on. How inflexible can teams be, or how flexible are most front offices when it comes to, yeah, kind of evolving on the fly in a season where you still don't have as much of a sample as maybe you'd like?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in this part of the year, I think front offices, you're going to sit down and you're going to talk about different scenarios about what might happen with your season and what your responses might be. We had a really interesting example of that where we thought we were going one direction. This would have been in 2016, where we had a pretty good team that was challenging for a top four seed in the West. And then Mark broke his foot. Mike started having some injury problems, and we knew right then that we weren't going to contend for anything important. And we had Courtney Lee and Jeff Green on expiring contracts. So we changed directions literally in the week before the trade deadline and traded Jeff for a first round pick and Courtney for 4 second round picks. And I mean, that was super late, but I mean, you prepare yourself for all those scenarios so that you're able to shift directions when you need to. And obviously you're having conversations with other teams leading up to that so that you know where the opportunities and the options are. So that we knew once we changed directions that Charlotte was a team that potentially had a need at shooting guard and had been asking about shooting guards. And so we were able to make a deal relatively quickly with them for Courtney.
Yeah, and I think that most fans want that type of thinking from organizations. Like, hey, if you're not going to win, make sure that you get something back. But do you think that it makes it more difficult for the Raptors to you know, go down those timelines to prepare for those scenarios or actually enact those scenarios when you just have come off of a championship, when you do have guys like Kyle Lowry who means so much to this franchise, or even, you know, Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka who have become, you know, so endeared to that group, that when you're making those trades, you can't make them even if it's, I don't know, maybe looks like to you in the organization like it is a win, that there's more of an impetus to satisfy the fan base by making sure that everyone sees clearly that you got a haul back for guys that I don't think anyone outside of this place would look like you should get a haul for those type of players.
Well, I mean, getting out of the way of your own sentimentality is one of the keys to being effective in the front office. And I think, you know, Toronto already showed that. I mean, they were willing to trade DeMar DeRozan, which I'm sure was a very emotional thing for them in one sense, but also it was clearly the right move. They got Kawhi Leonard and won the championship. So, you kind of have to set that aside. And I always felt like the showing the fans part of it is it kind of solves for itself, right? Because when you show wins, when you show results, that's ultimately how you get how you get the fans to stay on your side and keep coming to the arena.